there. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade. And on this episode of Our Taste is Trash,
we review the magical holiday film Jack Frost,
discuss Njuti Gatwa as the new Doctor Who,
and talk the Golden Globe nominations.
So remember to rate, review, and follow wherever you listen.
Stick around.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Welcome into another episode of Our Taste is Trash. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jade.
Jade, so much to talk about this week. I feel like sometimes we're sitting here struggling to figure out what the fuck we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah.
Not that we have more than, you know, 5.5 people listening anyway, but... This week, we definitely are struggling for content. There's so much I feel like that's topical as well as just happening overall in the TV slash film industry.
It's been going on this week. A crazy week.
Crazy week. Yeah. We have to talk about this first, Jade, because I heard about it. You heard about it. We were texting back and forth about it because it was just this wild thing that's been going on. This is your one of your favorite restaurants. Wouldn't you say, Jade, that this is happening at? Maybe your top five?
Well, you know, not like in that level, but
like top five go-tos, like we'll put it in that.
Yeah. Category. Like when I'm lazy and I'm like, I just want something comforting. Yeah. Panera. 100%.
Panera bread. So Uber, if you don't know,
Red Bull.
And if you don't know what we're talking about here, so there's this wild new lemonade that they've put on their fucking menu. Apparently it's called Charged Lemonade.
Yeah.
And this thing has. And we were trying to do the math because, you know, not that I graduated as an engineering student or even close, but trying to do the math on like what this equates to. So I'm just going to take the largest size, Jade, that you would get, because let's face it, you're going to fucking Panera, right? You're going to get, instead of getting the fucking medium, you're probably getting the large because it's only what, like 10 cents more.
Typically get the 30 ounce, the large.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like. Because what? It's like 10, 15 cents more and you're getting like almost double your drink, right? Or like at least... another 25% of your drink. So fuck it. Yeah. Why not? And you get free refills at fucking Panera. So why wouldn't you? If you're sitting down having something, you get two drinks, two iced teas, I'd be like, oh, there, you know?
Yeah.
So this thing has in one 30 ounce drink, one large drink, has the equivalent of 390 milligrams of caffeine. And if you don't know what that is. So if you don't know what that is, I know, Jade, we had a discussion, but if you don't know what that is, we were looking it up. The average cup of coffee has something like 90 milligrams. So one, you know, you think about a cup of coffee you would have in the morning, about 80 to 90 milligrams.
So that's about 4 cups of coffee is one of these charged lemonades, 30 ounce.
You know what's funny is I was looking up a Red Bull because you would think like, to me, like energy drinks have a lot of caffeine. Like that's what they're sold as, right?
Yeah.
Like energy, like you're supposed to have energy, caffeine, fucking sugar.
All you go, you're wired.
A Red Bull has less than an average cup of coffee. So like 80 milligrams of, of caffeine for a can.
Well, I think it's because Red Bull has other stimulants such as guarana. But guess what also has guarana?
Charged lemonade. That's fucking wild.
That's a fucking energy drink.
So like, I'm just trying to like do the math here. So you're telling me I could drink one of these charged lemonades, large size, or 5 Red Bulls. That's what we're talking about here. 5 Red Bulls in one drink. And you can get multiple refills. So you could like have one while you're sitting there, fill it up before you leave. You're having almost a 12 pack of fucking Red Bulls just in one sitting.
Oh God. That like hurts my chest thinking about it. That makes my arms like, you know, that tingly feeling
when you have like too much caffeine, like it's making my skin just itch. Like thinking about it like that.
Yeah. You know, it's like when all of a sudden this cold sweat washes over you. That's it's like the cold sweats.
The only time I thought I was going to die from caffeine was one time I used to go to Starbucks religiously. And one time we convinced the barista, me and my buddy, because we went there all the fucking time, to not water down the cold brew. So you know how like they do the cold brew it's like water.
Sick.
And I got a small, and it was almost completely full of just the concentrate that they pour out of that thing. Jade, I had like, you know, like the short breaths and then like the skin crawl. And then like, it was like,
yes, it's like you get like, gross, it was like goosebumps.
I just remember like the rest of the day, I was like,
yeah. Oh my God. I was like, okay. You know what? I had one time and I thought I was going to have a heart attack, which is like saying something. Have you ever had Buddy Brew's Bolt cold brew, the canned one?
Oh my God. Yes. That stuff is
that shit makes my heart race. That made me feel sick. So, and that I'm probably is maybe a little bit more than a Red Bull.
I was going to say, like, you're talking maybe that's probably 100, maybe 120.
Maybe, you know, 120. Like,
let's say up.
Yeah, milligrams
let's
just
say,
of caffeine.
Let's say 100. So, but you're still, Jade, you're still talking about a third of the caffeine that's in one fountain drink. Like that's, but people have died, Jade. Like that's why we're talking about this. Like two people, right?
Why? Yeah. So two people currently have died from drinking charged lemonade. There are two separate lawsuits going against Panera. The first person to die was a girl named Sarah Kratz. She was 21 years old. She was a college student and she had a heart condition. And so this is important because she drank one 30-ounce charged lemonade, died of a heart attack. And the issue here is that she intentionally stayed away from energy drinks because she knew it could affect her heart condition. So she got the charged lemonade, not understanding that it was caffeinated or as caffeinated as it was. So the problem here is Panera puts their drinks at a drink station. So they don't get the drinks for you. They give you a cup, you go up, you choose your drink. So the charged lemonade is right next to the regular lemonade and the regular teas. And if you're someone that maybe you don't read the menu board because you know your order, you know what you get every single time.
If you're below the age of 70, are you reading the menu at Panera? Like, you know, there's like three options that you're going to get. There's like three things.
You're not paying attention to the types of drinks because again, you're just buying a cup.
Because they're handing you a fucking cup. Yeah. They're going, here's a cup, go choose your drink. Yeah, and you're like, okay.
I want a 30-ounce drink or I want a large drink. You're just paying for the drink and then you go pick what you want. So more than likely, she asked for a 30-ounce drink, goes there, says, oh, charged lemonade. Now, in my mind, I would assume it was like electrolytes or organic or
on lemonade,
whatever.
Probably thinking like it's a branded type of lemonade that like Panera makes.
Because
like
funky version of
lemonade. Think about all the other bullshit that you've seen on there. Like, you know, fucking, I don't know, you know, I think of like Gatorade with all their bullshit names where they're like icy cool blast, like Arctic chill. And you're like, okay, whatever. That's just blue raspberry. Okay, whatever. It doesn't have caffeine in it. You know,
it's
just, yeah.
Like Baja Blast from Mountain Dew, you know?
Like, I would never if you were to show me five different types of lemonade and one of them was called charged lemonade, I'd be like, oh, that's just, I don't know, some bullshit lemonade from some company. Like, I wouldn't think it has caffeine in it. Like, that would not be.
Or I would have thought that it was like, maybe it was like sour. Maybe it was an extra sour lemonade, you 100%. Know? Whatever. I don't fucking know. But regardless, clearly not labeled enough or correctly. So she drank one of those, tragically died. And then now we have a second death coming from a 47-year-old man out of Florida who drank three 30-ounce charged lemonades, I believe in one day, and suffered a heart attack as well. And so again, the issue of mislabeling, because if you think, okay, if he sat in the restaurant and ate and he got his first 30-ounce lemonade, he refilled it while he was still there, drank the second 30-ounce lemonade, and then filled it for a third time to go leave and go home. That's his third one of those. I mean, Josh, that's, what's the math on that? 4 times 3, that's 1,200 milligrams of fucking caffeine. And you're allotted daily, I think it's supposed to be like 1,000.
It's 400. The FDA recommends no more than 400.
Sorry, 400.
Yeah, so that's three times the amount of your daily recommended caffeine. And I mean, to put that in perspective, I'm just doing quick math here. That's like 15 Red Bulls.
Yeah.
You're drinking the equivalent of like 15 Red Bulls, like one after the other.
Oh my God. Like that's fucking insane. So of course, Panera being a corporation as per usual, trying to take no fault, being like it was properly labeled. It says in our things that it's caffeinated. But the issue too that a lot of these lawsuits are stating is that it says on there that it has as much caffeine as one cup of their dark roast, which they found out not true at all.
That's bullshit.
So they're like, well, that's false advertising. You didn't label this correctly. Because maybe if you're someone who drinks a shit ton of coffee and you read that, you're like, that's 3 cups of coffee. Like I've done 3 cups of coffee in a day. I've lived.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, been jittery, but I've lived.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So this is massive. Whatever you do, guys, do not drink the charged lemonade if you have any sort of heart or health issues.
Or just want to live a healthy, productive life. Like, don't drink it, because that just sounds like a fucking nightmare. Like, even at my best, like, drinking that much caffeine in a day just, like, ruins my day. Like, I'd just be like, I feel like absolute shit. Yeah.
Like, every once in a blue moon. So I use a French press to make coffee. And sometimes if I don't finish the whole, like, press, I will put it in the fridge and then it becomes cold brew. And then the next morning, even that little bit of cold brew, I'm like,
water that shit down.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my chest is feeling a little tight. But yeah, like, that's insane. So guys, just steer clear of the charged lemonade.
Well, speaking of deaths, Jade, we have had some tragic deaths in the Hollywood community over the past week. We've had the first one is Andre Brower. Brower or Brewer?
Brower.
Brower. I was right. Damn it. See, I was just so convinced I was wrong. I didn't even know who this was until you brought it up. But his main role is from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah, that's his most notorious role, as Captain Holt.
Yeah.
And he's obviously well-renowned
actor. So many things.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of shows, a lot of movies, but that was, I think, his most notorious role as Captain Holt, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which, by the way, I've been getting TikToks from Peacock and the Brooklyn Nine-Nine page of his speeches as Captain Holt saying, like, goodbye to his crew. And I've been fucking crying because I've also, in a weird, weird coincidence, been rewatching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh.
So the fact that this, like, happened, I know. I was like, Captain Holt?
I mean, he wasn't that old, was he? Like, was he in his 50s?
No.
Was he older than that? Maybe he just held his age very well. But, like, I thought he was,
60s,
like,
60s or 70s.
Really?
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let's look it up. Let's do our job.
That's okay. I'm going to take a guess right now. He was 63. I'm going to say 63. That'd be nice. Because I don't know.
He was 61.
Oh, I mean, I guess still, I mean, you're getting up there, like, in your 60s, but, like, it looked like, I mean, did they say what happened to him or anything, or do we know?
I think it was just, like, a heart attack.
Yeah.
Classic.
That's sad.
Really sad, really tragic, very beloved. I mean, that is the most, like I said, an iconic character. He's, you know, he's like the Michael Scott of Brooklyn Nine-Nine in terms of, like, how notorious he is and how important he was. So, yeah, kind of a huge loss for any 99 fans.
Well, speaking of Michael Scott, we also had another death, which was Bill Shea, right? Who is?
Yes. He was the prop master on The Office, I believe, for eight or nine seasons of The Office. So he tragically died. It was kind of out of nowhere as well. For those who listen to Office Ladies podcast with Jenna Fischer and Angela Kinsey, he was a huge asset to them as well. Like, they would ask him every single week when they would review a different episode questions about props, you know, like, how did he make this and how did he figure this out or what did he have to do to get this? And so he was, you know, he participated a lot in the show and he helped to make things kind of come to life. Like, fans of The Office would constantly write into Office Ladies asking about props and Phil Shea would provide that information. One of the last things I believe that he had sent Angela before his passing was he kind of said, I can't believe how many people actually care about the props. Like, when you're a prop master, you know, it's, unless, like, hero props are different, especially in an action or sci-fi film, right? Like, if you have to make Thor's hammer, you're like, yeah, that was me. That's, you know, pretty proud of that. Like, people care about that, right? But normally in a sitcom, no one's really thinking, you know, you're like, oh, I just make the props, right? But he was a huge, huge asset to that show. So sad to see him go as well.
I was like, and it was suicide, right? Like, did he kill himself? I thought that's what I had read about him. Or am I off base on this?
What?
I thought I had read that. Perhaps I'm not reading the right thing. I was looking at a couple of things here just on the news, and I thought it said that he had actually killed himself, which is kind of crazy.
No. Yeah. Oh my God. Die by suicide.
Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, he too was about, he says he was about 62. He was 62 years old. That's crazy. But.
It makes sense. They didn't mention that on the Office Ladies podcast.
Oh, that's sad though. I mean, that's just sad. Two people in Hollywood that really were, you know, essentially, especially Andre. But anyway, Moving on, Jade, now that we've really brought the show down to a level that we can...
A little darkness.
Why don't we transition to something shinier? We'll say that. Golden Globe noms just dropped this past week. And it's wild, Jade, because I don't think that I've seen most of these movies, to be honest. Like, some of them I have wanted to see, they've been on my list, but some of them I'm just like, I don't know. I'm like,
I've been in the same boat. This is one of those years that I just, the group of films that they've chosen has just not piqued my interest the way that, like, do you remember like 2022, like last year? I felt we'd seen the majority of
everything,
them, you know,
I'd seen everything.
Everything was amazing. We were like, this is such a great year. This year, I'm like, I wonder with the strike, you know, pushing so many films off that it made it a little bit harder for some of them to get in during this round. You know,
maybe.
You have to think that kind of hurt them a lot. So weird year.
Well, Jade, I just want to go over a couple of them real quick. Best director. Let's start there for the Golden Globes. I think this is a slam dunk category for Greta Gerwig for Barbie. I mean, you have nominations include Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We have Celine Song for Past Lives, which I've heard is very good. I haven't watched that yet.
I've been dying to see it.
We have Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, which Martin Scorsese for Killers of the Flower Moon, another movie I haven't brought myself around to watching because I know it's going to be a 3.5-hour slog fest. And then we have a nomination for Poor Things by, is it Yorgos Lanthimos, I think?
Yeah.
Like I said, if Greta Gerwig doesn't win this thing, I think it's just a travesty. I mean, I wouldn't understand why she wouldn't win. She had the biggest movie of the year. It, you know, is something different. And I think she has elevated herself to the status of the people that she's nominated with.
Well, I mean, she already kind of made it big with Lady Bird. That was huge.
And but
that,
I feel like
received several.
I feel like that is in a category of like, you know, like indie movie kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you have this great indie director made a good indie movie, but this is...
It was an A24 film.
Yeah, she made a freaking blockbuster of a movie and made it interesting.
Well, she also did Little Women. I mean, Little Women was massive too for audiences, and it also received several awards as well. So
she got nominated, but I don't think she won. I think she got nominated, right? But
no,
I don't think
she won. No. Yeah. So this is, but I'm just saying, like, it's maybe, are you saying like it's more like it's her time?
I think it's her time because I mean, like, because here's what I'm saying. Like, even with Little Women, who had a lot of success, I think you could put her up into a category with, you know, the Spielbergs, the Scorsese's, and Christopher Nolan's of the world, and people would be like,
stand out as much.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh yeah, but like she's only done like one movie, or like she's that one was okay, but I mean, you know, now seeing her name here with Scorsese and Nolan, I'm going, if those guys fucking win, that is a miscarriage of this category, like 100%.
Truly. I'm sorry, but we don't need another white male director winning.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I don't have to see their movies to know they weren't as good as Barbie was, like at least at the same level of success. Like, sorry.
Because both of those films are basically them just creating and not editing. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure, of course, they're really, really good. We know that Christopher Nolan's a great director. We know that Martin Scorsese is an amazing director. But at the same time, like, they are now at that level where I think they don't pare themselves down as much. And now it's harder and harder for audiences to, like, really enjoy their films, or mainstream audiences, I should say. Whereas, like, hello, everyone and their mother saw Barbie. Duh.
Yeah.
Like, literally everyone and their mother.
Everyone. Yes. Jade, there's another category that I don't think has much controversy at all, and that is the best animated motion picture.
Oh, it's Across the Spider-Verse all the way.
All the way. I mean, you have a couple of flicks. I'm not going to say them all, but like, you have two animes, which I'm sure are good. You have the Mario movie, Wish, and Elemental. And like, the only thing that comes close is Elemental. And that wasn't even that great. So,
yeah, you know, like, again, like, I've heard great things about Suzume and Boy in the Heron, the two animes, but I still don't think it could touch Across the Spider-Verse. Like, that was a masterpiece. If you guys listen to our review of it, I mean, I can't say enough good things about it. Like, it's probably one of my favorite movies of the year.
Yeah.
Like, still.
I think that is my favorite movie of the year. Like, if I was to do a top film, it would probably be that one.
Yeah. It's also available on Netflix if you haven't seen it yet. So,
yeah, you should 100% watch that movie. Looking here, I'm going to skip over. I don't want to talk about Best Picture drama because I know it's going to be like Oppenheimer or Killers of the Flower Moon. You know what I bet they're going to do? Yeah. Because you know what would be a smart movie for the Globes or a smart move for the Globes?
Mm-hmm. Split up Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Yes. Unlike the Oscars, as some people may or may not know, they don't lump Best Picture in with every movie category. They have a specific drama Best Picture and they have a comedy musical Best Picture.
Yeah. Well, then they have Best Screenplay, which is almost like Best Picture for the Oscar, in which they're all up against each other.
Yes. But in the drama category, you have Oppenheimer up against, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon, again, Maestro, Past Lives. I think it would be smart if, and then in comedy, you have the likes of Barbie, May December, Poor Things.
Oh my God.
Oppenheimer and Barbie. It should be like, that should be there.
I just have a bone to pick about Best Picture Comedy Musical category. First of all, horrible category. Stop lumping musicals in with shit. Second of all,
also,
in what fucking way?
Are there any musicals even in this category? Like,
no, I expected Wonka to be in there or something, but whatever. But, you know, it's like a musical. So, but what's wild is they have May December in there as comedy, which is fucking nuts. Fucking nuts. There was not a single point I laughed in that film. It is dark. It is sad.
Do you think December tried to get in on that category just because they knew the drama category was so stacked?
100% they did. This is exactly what they do at the Globes. That's why things get miscategorized, is because they stand a better chance in an opposite category. That to me, and also the fact that that's even nominated at all. Sorry to May December, but no.
Jade, I'm going to say something here. So again, I'm just going to skip a couple of categories here. The best original song obviously is dominated by Barbie and will probably go to Billie Eilish for the song that none of us can escape. What Was I Made For? Which I think is a great song. Like, Billie Eilish is great. Like,
I feel bad because it is a beautiful song and she's very talented, but it got played so much that it's now a song that I can't fucking stand. And I feel so bad because it's
I understand that.
Not her fault, but also I'm like, if I hear that one more time, I will scratch my eyes out. Ears.
I mean, the only other thing in this category that I would hope that would win if it wasn't Billie Eilish is Jack Black for Super Mario and his Peaches song.
Peaches.
Oh my God. I would be okay with it. I would laugh so fucking hard.
If he want, and then they play it as he's like walking
out. He would absolutely play it. Dude, he's the only one that gave a fuck about that movie. He is the only one that gave any fucks about that entire movie.
Jack Black brought everything to that movie. I watched it recently because they put it on Netflix, and
everyone else was trash. So everyone else was trash in that movie.
Annoyed and bored, and also I never needed to see Mario and Luigi's hair.
No.
Why do they take their hats off?
Nope.
I'm sorry. That was like one of the first things that bothered me. But anyways.
Yeah, as it should, Jade, as it fucking should, because it just doesn't, I don't know, doesn't make any fucking sense. Should we hit a couple of TVs here just really quick? Because I was looking down at the TV section, and one of the things I just want to call out here is looking at the, because I think we touched on this a little bit before, looking at the category for, I'm trying to find it as I'm talking here, and I'm not going fast enough because I'm trying to find the right category. Looking for the best TV drama series or limited series. That's what I was looking for. Limited series here. And this is one. So I need to watch All the Light We Cannot See, I feel like, before I make a decision here. No, not good. It's not good.
You don't need to see it.
Then I definitely need to watch Lessons. And then I need to watch Lessons in Chemistry.
Lessons in Chemistry, dude. If that doesn't win, I'm going to scream. It is so fucking good. I would say the only thing
better than
that
beef.
Comes close.
Better than beef.
It's better than beef.
Really?
I promise you.
Bold. Yeah.
Like, listen, beef is amazing. And I think beef is also a major contender, as well as Daisy Jones and the Six. But
I'm sorry. I couldn't make it through that. I couldn't make it through that series, Jade. I couldn't do it. Daisy Jones and
I
Six.
Will say you have to get past episode 3, which is kind of fucking annoying. They have to watch 3 episodes to get to the good stuff. But it only picks up after episode 3, which is annoying. Tough. But like Lessons in Chemistry, though, is one of those shows that like it just the storytelling is incredible. The characters are so well thought out. The stylization of everything. Every episode left me with something like shocking or interesting. I learned something new and it pulls you along. And it's a very heartbreaking yet heartwarming tale. Like, ugh, incredible. Incredible. Again, Beef, also major contender. I wouldn't be sad if Beef won over Lessons in Chemistry.
I really did like Beef. Like, that's one of my favorite, like, new concept kind of shows that really impressed me this year. And whenever anyone tells me they haven't watched it, I'm like, you should go back on Netflix and watch Beef. It's so
trying
good.
To explain to people the plot of Beef makes me it's sound wild. Like a fucking insane person.
That's because the plot is fucking insane. Like, how did that show get past a pitch? Like, honestly, like if you're trying to explain this movie or this concept to someone, I think they would go, that sounds dumb. And why would anyone want to watch that?
But remember, it's also A24.
It is A24. That's, yeah.
Because they know what the fuck they're doing. They know what they're doing.
They do. I just want to meet like the top executive producers of that company who are making the decisions, because they have their finger on the pulse of like what is actually good. Like, they have
and like taste. What audiences want and what's new and what's interesting, like, and different stories.
They're the people I want curating like my Netflix or streaming content.
Oh my God,
like, where
100%.
I'm like,
I've talked about their like merch store.
Yeah.
Fucking incredible. The zines that they make for every movie that they produce. Ugh. Mm. Obsessed. Like, anyways, they're amazing. And also remember, they were one of the few studios that actually made deals with SAG-AFTRA. Yeah.
Because
to allow
they immediately were like, oh, what are your demands? Yep, we'll do that.
Yep, we'll accept it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They agreed to terms that were better than I think the terms they got from the rest of the studios.
Oh,
they were like
100% because they agreed to their initial draft of terms. So like it was definitely better than what the studio organization finally signed.
The other category I think is going to be really competitive here is best TV series in a drama, because again, we don't need to read all of them here. There's only a couple that really matter. We have The Last of Us, which is probably one of the biggest shows that came out last year.
Ugh,
amazing.
I want
show.
It to win. I have a feeling it's probably not
because
sci-fi fantasy almost never does.
But Jade, it's because it's up against two amazing dramas, which are, well, one's a historical drama. You have, but it's the finale of The Crown, which has
Still
won
sucks.
In the past. And
sorry, I cannot get into The Crown.
Wow. I need to watch.
Not for me.
Wow. And then Succession, the final season, which
also
was great. The last season was great. It was amazing.
It's just King Lear with
it is.
Billionaires.
With
I hate
billionaires.
It.
Jade, everything is Shakespeare. Everything. If you look at it,
everything
is Shakespeare.
God, do you remember in like the early 2000s when every rom-com that came out
was literally
was based on Shakespeare?
Was literally
Can we bring that back? Can we bring that back? That was my favorite era.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So good. 10 Things I Hate About You. She's the Man.
At least I know how to like help. I wish I was smart, like maybe a little bit smarter in college, because like if I was to ever like help out a child of mine in college, like write a paper, I'd be like, just argue that everything is Shakespeare and nothing has progressed, gotten better since then. Just take like three examples.
I actually did write a paper like that in high school, except it was Jane Austen.
Yeah. Another great
argument. And I named every movie and book that was based off of a Jane Austen novel. Basically stated that like she made the blueprint for most romance and like romantic comedies besides like Shakespeare.
And every mystery, murder mystery is fucking
Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie. Yeah, I was at the tip of my tongue. Yeah, Like literally, you look at anything.
Everything,
and you're
like, because I've read so much Agatha Christie, everything that I watch or read now, I'm like, this is Agatha Christie.
Agatha Christie.
This is Agatha Christie, which I don't mind. I mean,
she's great. She's a fucking genius. Like, don't get me wrong.
And Then There Were None is one of my favorite plots of all time. And every time a new movie comes out, that's And Then There Were None, I'm instantly in.
But
I'm
like, you know what taints your perspective on that is when you know is a certain thing. What pisses you off is when you're like, you have to be better than the source material or be more creative. Like when you already have the blueprint, it's already good. So like, do at least as good. And when you don't and they fuck it up, you're like, how did you fuck it up? Well, you had the story.
There's kind of rules set out in the story and you kind of have to follow those rules. Yes. You can still do interesting, unique things, but the second you break the rules, it fucks up the whole plot. Exactly. Then it doesn't work anymore. That's the whole point of it. So like that's for those who don't, And Then There Were None is the story of a bunch of people who get together in like a cabin and then they all start dying one by one. So one of them has to be the murderer. So obviously you guys have probably heard this plot a million times. It started with Agatha Christie. And again, one of my favorite plots. I love it.
It's been done like a zillion times. Like,
yes. Yeah.
One last one, Jade, and then we'll move on to our movie this week. But best musical or comedy TV series.
Oh, my favorite.
Lots
category.
Of great choices here. I mean, you have Abbott Elementary, you have Only Murders, you have the final season of Ted Lasso, and also The Bear. But Jade,
in Jury Duty, Josh.
Jade, that's where I was going.
Sorry.
Jade, where I want it, what I really want in my heart is to have Jury Duty win. Like,
thank you.
I would love
thank
that.
Thank you.
Like, I would absolutely love that.
I was looking at this category too, and I was thinking about that when I saw Jury Duty was nominated, and I was like, in my heart of hearts, I want it to be Jury Duty. Realistically, it's going to be like Ted Lasso or The Bear. But like,
oh yeah, it's going to be Ted Lasso with The Bear, 100%. But like, I would love to see James Marsden and fucking, what's his name?
Ron.
Come up. I just watched it recently too. Dude, both of them coming up and winning fucking Golden Globes.
He came up to accept that award, James
Dude, Marsden. If he's not there, I would fucking riot. I would, like, are you kidding me? He needs to be there. He better be there. He better be on the fucking red carpet.
He's probably invited, to be honest, because whenever they do the larger categories, it's not an individual. It's usually like directors, producers, and like the main cast.
They need to, him and James at least need to be there. Him and the whole cast there would be fucking amazing. Like them all on the red carpet.
They probably would have a table. Maybe. God, I don't know. Amazing.
Movie review. First look. Our movie this week, which is...
Yes.
Jack Frost, it's a throwback, 1998. And Jade, I just want to throw up one thing that just caught my attention immediately in this fucking movie. This movie is so aggressively 90s. It's fucking insane. From
I love it so much.
Just the sports that are picked, like the fucking, they're in goddamn Colorado. And this movie might as well be a fucking commercial for the X Games with the amount of snowboarding and everything else they fucking do in this movie.
X Games, dude, I miss that shit.
Right?
Also, it just reminds me, do you remember that TikTok sound? Like, oh, he on X Games mode. All I could think about the whole time. But truly, like, what a time. That was like all extreme sports. So it was like snowboarding and skateboarding and like surfing and BMX and motocross and... That was like a whole thing. Like, do you know how much gear I wore? I wore nothing but like skate gear and like motocross gear.
Jade, I had at least two pairs of Vans. Like I wore Vans all the time in the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, skate shoes. Yeah, I wore Vans and Converse. I wore like clothes. We famous stars and straps, like Dickies, Etnies, even like Billabong, Fox Racing, like all that shit. It was super popular. I mean, that's like PacSun. That's what it used to be. It was all like... gear for games like this. Like that was the thing. Oh man. I mean, think about an extremely goofy movie.
Oh God.
Like the whole thing is X Games.
Also,
like, he's a skateboarder.
Also just the amount of butt jokes in this. I forgot how much we were obsessed with like butt face, butt head. Jokes. Like everyone said butt things in the 90s. All the
butt head and butt face was very popular. Me and my sister called each other that all the time. And I can't believe they used to be like offensive.
And spaz. Oh, yeah. Remember that when you're like butthead? Like, because
spaz.
Remember?
So I didn't know spaz was a bad word. And I wrote that on in elementary school. One of the, like, the fucking kids in my class broke his arm. And we all like had to like
write. Is that really a bad word though? Like,
no, but like we wrote in like a card. And I was like, I was like, feel better. You're such a spaz. Ha ha ha. And then my teacher put a sticker over the word spaz because she said that that was inappropriate.
You can shut that
and
up.
And I was like, we call each other spaz in my house? Yeah. What the fuck you're talking about? But yeah, like, oh my God, the spiked hair that Taylor
with frosted Handley tips. Has.
So good with the giant ski goggles.
Yes.
Oh man. Even when like he wasn't skiing. So good. Yeah,
all the time. All the fucking time.
This movie, and the chains, the big ball chains. Jade,
I forgot. I was
back.
Like,
I think they actually kind of are back, but
Jade, I had so many chains when I was like 14, 15 years old. I had the neck chain. Of course I had my neck chain. And then I had my wallet chain. Like
wallet chain.
Yeah.
So good. You know, I actually do have a belt loop chain for my pants. It's huge. God. It's chunky.
I never really did the belt loop chain because I was just like did the wallet thing. But like, you know what was funny?
But it's to mimic the wallet chain, but it's not attached to the wallet.
I remember because they came out like after the wallet chains, but they were still like a thing for a while.
Like, I don't really want my wallet on a chain, but I like the chain.
You know where the wallet chain died?
Jinkos?
With suburban dads. Because suburban dads loved, do you remember that for a while? Dads
it was
loved
divorced dads.
The wallet chain. Divorced dads. They loved the wallet chain because they were like, oh, no one can steal my wallet. I'm going to put my wallet on a chain. And I was like,
yeah.
They put it right next to their clip-on phones on their belt.
You know what my divorced dad was obsessed with? Was fanny packs.
Oh, God. But back those are a thing now again. They're a thing now.
Yeah. Oh, listen, everything my dad was in the 80s and 90s is like popular with teenagers. Mullet, mustache, fast car, cut off muscle tee, jorts, fanny pack.
Dude, my like nephew has like a fucking mullet. Like,
yeah, my cousin
like,
had a mullet.
He's like,
for
this is a thing.
Time.
This is a thing that
he
we're
had
doing.
It for like 2 years in high school. Now he has like the curly floppy hair, which it actually does look really
fucking
nice.
Wild. Well, any initial thoughts about this movie before we take a quick break, Jade? Besides the aggressive snowboarding.
Yeah, this movie holds up for me. Yeah. It just, it's good. Like, it makes no sense and it's not supposed to. And I love that for this.
1,000%. We're going to take a quick break. We've already gone too long. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and review our movie this week. It's Jack Frost in the streaming now on Hulu.
Feature presentation.
Once upon a time, in the town of Medford, there lived a man named Jack Frost.
Happy holidays! You guys are great!
Are all musicians really flaky?
Yeah.
He had a beautiful wife and a loving son, but his job kept him away from home.
I brought you this.
On your harmonicas?
I got that the morning you were born. When you play that, no matter where I am, I can hear it.
Then one night, something happened. Something terrible.
It's okay. I miss him too.
That turned into something wonderful.
Our movie this week is Jack Frost. This is from 1998. It's directed by Troy Miller and written by actually a slew of people. Mark Steven Johnson, Steve Bloom, Jonathan Roberts, and Jeff Cesario.
Cesario?
Sure. We'll go with that. Jeff doesn't give
a fuck. There's an I in there.
Cesario. What's crazy is I was looking, their writing credits are kind of all over the place. I saw two of them worked on, which was 2 years prior to this, which is crazy because I forgot when this movie was done. They wrote the screenplay for James and the Giant Peach, the one by Tim Burton, which was a great movie. What's crazy for the director here, Jade, is that he hasn't done a ton of feature-length films. He did 7 episodes of Parks and Rec. He has done a couple of MTV Movie Awards, has directed the Oscars, and has done several comedy specials as well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But this movie, though, still, let's get into the meat of it, stars Michael Keaton as Jack Frost, Kelly Preston as Gabby Frost, Joseph Cross as Charlie, and Mark Addy as Mac. And if you don't recognize the name Mark Addy, you should, because you'd either recognize him probably from A Knight's Tale or as Robert Baratheon from Game of Thrones.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, I feel like now people know him as Robert Baratheon.
It's so wild that, yeah, like, if you look at him now and look, you're like, who is that fucking guy? And I was like, oh, yeah, put the beard on him, put the crown on him. There he is. That's fucking the king of the five kingdoms right there. So, Jay, let's dive right into it here. What was treasure for you in Jack Frost?
Oh, my God. Well, it's a long list, but I'll start with I'll start with kind of a big one here is for the snowman, the use of a full puppeteered animatronic instead of CGI. So in 1998, there was still a decent amount of CGI being used in Hollywood, you know, and obviously the level doesn't quite hold up.
A little bit different than today. I mean, they didn't have the computer generated, like,
not the full green scratch.
Yeah, like every fucking Marvel movie.
In certain scenes of this film, when CGI is used, you can tell it's just not bitmapped great.
It's not as clean. Yeah,
it's not as great. But the fact that they did use this animatronic makes the snowman hold up so well in 2023. I mean, the quality is amazing. Not only that, but I'm sure it allowed for a better performance by Joseph Cross, who played Charlie Frost, who had to interact with the snowman all the time, you know, rather than in today's world, it would be a tennis ball on a stick. So
also, you know, what's crazy is Joseph Cross is only like 12 years old in this movie.
I know.
And he gives a great fucking performance.
He's amazing in this. And what's like crazy to me is that, like, I think about sometimes the way that children's movies are made today and the way that a lot of child actors are either directed to act or do act. And I kind of miss this, like, realistic version. Like, kids are, first of all, understand more than you think. And 100%. Second of all, like, they don't need to be wild and wacky and crazy and overly animated to make a point across. Like, I think the softness that Joseph has is such a great characterization for Charlie because, you know, Charlie's just this like happy-go-lucky kid who loves his dad, worships him, and just wants him to be involved in his life, you know, and it doesn't need to be anything more than that. But anyways, yeah, back to the animatronic. I mean, to me, which, by the way, it was created by Jim Henson's Creature Shop, which should tell you why it's done. That's so great. Well.
I had no idea that was done. And it makes a lot of sense because it's so good. The movements are so good. Like you were saying, like everything about this is, I love practical things like this. And that's why it has to be one of the reasons why it's so interesting to watch.
Absolutely. And what about you? What's a treasure for you?
You know what I have to jump out with here, Jade, is the soundtrack is amazing. Like I remember as a kid, the opening scene, of course, is Jack Frost and his band, because literally that's what it's called, Jack Frost and the Jack Frost band. But the song Jack Frosty the Snowman that they are fucking singing is so fucking
blues
good.
Blues version of Frosty the Snowman.
So good.
Slaps so hard. And I'm like, I never knew I needed this until I heard it. You know what I mean? And what's hilarious to me, Josh, is the follow-up. Is the record label guy in the audience, who by the way looks insane.
Yes.
He's like on the phone. He's like, you got to hear this. And then he says, he's like, they're digging it. They're loving it. We got to sign these guys. I'm like over Frosty the fucking Snowman.
Also, Jade, you know what I noticed about this movie? There are no minorities in this movie. It like that. I looked at the crowd. It was all white people. I was like,
yeah,
there's not one. There are only pale faces in that audience.
That's par for the course. But, 1998.
But Jade, it doesn't stop there with the music. Every song selected, it felt like in this soundtrack was weather related. And but like still the songs were great. Like
they perfectly match the scenes.
Every single time. Like they had snow-related fucking songs. They had
heat-related songs.
The heat-related, they had fucking landslide at one point.
Josh, that's my second treasure. All right. The choice to play Landslides by Fleetwood Mac over a montage scene of Charlie building a snowman with his father's things after he's dead. Give them all the awards. So fucking, like, the timing of it too is so brilliantly done. So like the editors who are working on this as well, perfectly cut the scenes together to match up with moments in the song where there's certain pauses, slowdowns, uprisings, everything. And of course, the lyrics itself are so perfect. It talks about like snow drifts and like reflections and like all these other things. And like it's just, it was so well done. And it was like beautiful, but at the same time, I also kind of laughed because I was like, this is outrageous. This is fucking, like we're literally watching him build a snowman to landslides.
To landslide.
But it worked so well for me.
It, I don't know how it did, but it did. Like every,
it did.
I feel like there was no song, you know, sometimes where you watch even like 90s movies or 80s movies, you know, especially I think are guilty of this, where, and of course today, like I'm not leaving anything out, where like a soundtrack is just selected. They're like, these are popular songs and we're going to throw them in.
Yeah.
To a scene because it'll work. You
they
know?
Pick like, basically it's like the top 40. Yeah. And they just throw it into, and it's just like, this song has nothing to do with anything.
Like, this is definitely not the case. Like, obviously there were some popular songs in there, but I mean, these songs, like you said, not just match the mood of what was happening in the scene, but like also synced up with the editing style that was going on. So it wasn't like they just threw these.
Back when people actually fucking cared about that.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, they didn't have to go this hard for a fucking holiday movie about a snowman, but they did. And that's not all they did. You know, Jade, I think another treasure for me is, of course, I talked a little bit about the 90s nostalgia here because it was just so over the top. One of the things that really struck me here is how smartly written the relationships in this movie were done.
Yes.
Like the relationship between Michael Keaton and his son, you know, the relationship between the couple, you know, between Jack and what is her name? What is, shoot, I forgot her.
His
what
wife?
What is his wife's character's name?
Gabby.
Like, Gabby, their relationship, like one of the
their relationship was so great.
So good. So healthy. Like,
yes.
Like they had these funny little moments. Like even when they were fighting, I felt like they were doing it in such a healthy way. Like
there's
this amazing scene that struck me just the way they were talking about it. Because of course, I think you could just fall into stereotypes of like absentee father, you know, because you have this son that wants him to come to hockey games, but he's off trying to build, you know, a better life for not just himself, but like his family. Like he's working on getting signed by this record label and he wants to record some new stuff.
The conversation he has with Charlie when like he's like in bed in the fort and he explains kind of like why he's doing what he's doing was so good.
Yeah, like, because he's trying to break it down for him on a 12-year-old's level. Like, this is what I'm trying to do. And I understand that it's not fair sometimes. And I really do try to keep my word and I understand it's important and I'm going to try to work on that. Like, I'm going to try to work on that.
Yeah, because like he even says, he's like, you know how hockey is your dream? He's like, well, music is my dream. He's like, I'm trying to follow my dream, but in doing so, I'm also trying to provide a life for you and for your mother.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, and sometimes I have to make sacrifices to do that. And he's like, and they're not sacrifices that, of course, I want to make. He's like, I want nothing more than to like be there for you and be there with you, you know? And I appreciated those conversations. And I loved like the little bits between him and his dad. Like he says at 1.2, he's like, are all musicians flaky? And then Jack very honestly answers, he's like, yeah, definitely.
They are.
You know, and he's like,
even after he passes, you know, I think there was great relationship and dialogue between, you know, the son and the mother, you know, when Jack Frost dies, the person, there's a scene where the sun is out trying to clear the driveway and, you know, the snowplow comes by and throws more snow, which anyone who's lived up anywhere where it snowed knows how frustrating that can be. You like clear your driveway and then like the snowplow comes through and you're like, what the fuck? Like what the literal fuck? But he kind of has this freak out moment. Charlie does.
Yeah.
Where he's shoveling and his mom comes and she's like, don't worry, I'll just like drive through it. And he's like, no. And this was of course like on the eve of a year of when his dad died. And he's like crying and trying to shovel snow and trying to be like this provider. And his mom's just like, doesn't criticize him. Doesn't ask him like what's going on or freak out or have any stereotypical kind of moment. She just goes, you know what? It's okay. Like, I understand why you're upset. Like, I miss him too. And I was like, that's.
Yeah. Jesus that was such Christ. A beautiful moment because she just kind of gets down on her knees and she hugs him. She's like, I know, I miss him too. And like she basically allows the both of them to just grieve together without it being this like, you know, like I feel like it's so stereotypical when they try to force conversations of like, you know, well, you know, he's in a better place now and it's fine. And we can do this thing. Like they try to like solve the child's grief. And rather than trying to solve it, it's just accepting it and being like, you're allowed to experience this moment and it's okay. Like, yeah, it was so well done. And even showcasing the romance, because the scenes between Jack as a human and Gabby they're brilliant. And he is a human, you know, he's only, I think it's like 30 minutes of the film, the first like 25 or 30 mm-hmm. minutes of the film, he's alive. And the rest, he's a snowman. And when he's a snowman, he spends all this time with his son. So we only get those limited amount of time between Jack and Gabby, but the time that we're given, they manage to develop the relationship so much. I mean, like, the romance is there, the love is there. Like they have these like little things that they just like inside jokes and the way they speak to each other and their cadence. And like, oh my God, I even wrote down on my notes. I was like, Jack and Gabby are hot. Like I was into it.
I was watching this with my wife. She goes, that whole family is just fucking attractive. She's like, she's like, fucking Kelly Preston is hot in this movie. And she's like, Michael Keaton also like, really hot. Attractive. And I was like, God damn.
After that, I said, only Michael Keaton can pull off a receding hairline. He looks so good.
Yeah. I didn't know he was like almost 40 years old in this movie.
He was 47. He was almost 50.
I thought he was 37. He's 47 in this movie. He does not 47. That man does not look 47 years old in this movie.
I know. Good. Again, good looking couple. And I believed it. Yeah. Those are such great moments. And I think probably my last treasure for me was just the balance between the serious moments and the fun childlike moments. You know, the film was about repairing the relationship between Jack and Charlie. So we get a lot of those moments between the two of them where Charlie kind of tries to like reconcile with a little bit of his anger that he's held onto from his dad, because, you know, his dad left their family Christmas to go perform at this party to get, you know, a record label deal. But his dad changed his mind, turned around, was heading back home when he died. So you have to imagine Charlie's upset. In his mind, you're probably thinking, well, if he had never left, you would have never died. Right. So So it's like, he's trying to reconcile that a little bit. And even Jack is too, where he's like, I should have been there for you more, because, you know, now that he obviously had died, he realizes time is so precious. And it's important to be there with the loved ones. But they balance that out with these really silly, fun, kind of stupid things for kids, like the snowball war fight thing that they had. Incredible. It was so goofy. Like they literally had sound effects like it was wartime, like that missiles were going with the snowballs. It was amazing. I was like, this is so fun. And then when he gets attacked by the bullies and they fucking sledding down the mountain, when they break that sled and start snowboarding on a sled, made no goddamn sense.
No,
but I was so into it. I was like, yeah, this is fun. I don't care. None of it's realistic. I don't care. But like, those moments were so important because, number one, it gives it some levity, and number two, yet again, this was kind of marketed towards kids, so it allows those kids to have those funny, fun, silly, goofy moments, but also understand that there's a little bit more serious subject to it.
You know, Jade, transitioning into trash here and what was trash, it made me think of my only, really, I don't have that much that I'm that mad about. I have two things, and both of them really center around one particular thing. I don't understand where the magic comes from for Jack Frost. Because it doesn't make any sense when you think about it. So we get introduced by this because his son, on like the 1 year anniversary of his death, builds a snowman with all of his old clothes, which is understandable, a little weird. I'd be a little creeped out if I was an adult in that situation, but I'd understand it because of a child going through grief. But like,
he's trying to build his dad.
I get it. But listen, Jade, if you had someone that you loved like deeply and were in a relationship.
Well, on top of that, he's recreating the memory of building that snowman with his father.
I get it. But
remember, they used his hat?
I'm thinking as like a spouse or a friend, you're coming over and you see a snowman that's shaped like your friend dressed up. I'd be like,
I wouldn't judge them. You're an asshole.
I am, Jade. That's the problem. No, anyway, sympathy. Let's
continue.
Here's the problem. So he has this harmonica that isn't magical. It's just a harmonica that is given to him by his father. he plays it and the snowman comes to life.
Yeah. Because remember, his dad said, if you play it, I will hear it and I will come.
I guess that's true. But it's just it that and then the end is the same thing. Not understanding where the magic comes from. He then at some point comes out of the snowman and becomes the spirit of his former human self. Says a few magical words like, you know, I'll always be here. And then like turns into dust. Yeah, he says,
I will always hear you.
Then he turns into dust and swirls away. Josh, that's
called the magic of Christmas.
All right. That's just Christmas magic. Because I was like, these are the only two parts in the whole movie that don't make sense to me. And
I will say they do acknowledge that there's no explanation for him returning through what is, I think, one of the best quotes in the movie, where Jack is kind of talking to himself after he first turn, you know, comes back and he's a snowman. He says, why a snowman? Is the universe that unoriginal? Is it the name Jack Frost? Because if that's it, that's not even clever. And like, it's so funny to me because they kind of acknowledge that like none of it really makes any sense. No. But like at the same time,
who cares?
Doesn't need to.
Yeah. I would say on the same note, one of the first things I love about him, like realizing he's a snowman, is like, it's kind of like tongue in cheek. You wouldn't notice it as a kid. Like, I don't remember this as a kid, but I definitely remember it now as an adult, where he like looks down and checks his junk and he's like, oh,
like, Josh, I had that in here too. Like one of the very first things is he looked down at his crotch and he goes, no.
Well, because as a kid, I think you would almost mistake that as him like having a large belly. Cause he like kind of holds like, his belly. Legs. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I think that's what I thought when I was a child, is I thought he was looking down and realized he didn't have legs because he has arms.
I thought he was just because he was chunky, because he's large. Yeah, because he's like, he's kind of holding his belly.
That was projection, Josh. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, maybe. Could be, Jay. Oh, thanks a lot.
but no, that was
any other trash for you?
I would say my only one other thing was just... they tried to have this thread of like, right, like people would witness the snowman. So the main one was, of course, Sid Gronick, by the way, played by Henry Rollins, who was the lead singer of Black Flag.
That's crazy.
You know. It's just such a random casting. But anyways, but like his whole storyline of like being on the news because he saw a snowman come to life, yada yada. Like they had it like it was like the news and then kind of on the radio show. And then in the end, it was fucking weird when the parents were like talking to the cops and like, wait, he's with a snowman. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
What are we doing here? Why would you even say that? Why would you just give him the description of the kid?
Yeah.
Like, why are you talking about this? I just didn't think it went anywhere. Like showing like Sid knew about the snowman, but like no one believed him. It didn't end up and doing anything. Like, you know what I mean? It didn't go anywhere. So it's kind of like, it was funny. I think it was obviously more for the kids, but like it just didn't lead up to anything. I would have loved at the end if like he grew a fierce snowman and like if like maybe when they were doing that snowman building competition in like the town square, that he was just like horrified and like had to like run away. And like maybe he was at the ice hockey rink and he was like looking around, like waiting for snowmen to pop out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like just something more to make it make sense. But that is such a minor thing for me. So whatever.
Yeah. I mean, kind of the same. I just had little nitpicky things here and there, but what about best performance? I mean, to me, Jade, this is Michael Keaton's movie and he does the Michael Keaton thing. Like this is amazing.
Oh yeah. I mean, Michael Keaton is at Michael Keaton's best in this. Like, first of all, the fact that he is really performing on these songs. And by the way, like I said before, he wrote that first song, like talented. Multifaceted. He's oozing sex appeal in a movie that he should not be oozing sex appeal in.
This movie has so much, even as a snowman, like I feel like is just so like, how is this PG? Like
he's got the riz, as the kids say. And like he's just and like the fact that the majority of the film, I should say, he's not even physically there. Like he's just doing voiceover work. Incredible.
Jade, I feel like if you wanted to do a paper or a study on the female gaze, it would be this movie. Just be like, this is what women want. Like right here.
If I, a 32-year-old woman, put on social media, showed to a group of
women,
alt-right males, and was like,
this is the female gaze.
This is the female. This is the
this
dream.
40, this 47-year-old man.
47-year-old man with a receding man hairline
is the female gaze.
Is what I'm looking for. They'd be like, "The fuck are you talking about? He needs to be a jacked gym bro with hair plugs." And I'd be like, "Wrong, wrong,
wrong answer."
That's not. This is it. It's Michael Caine. He's amazing in this. And I will give like an honorable mention to, of course, Joseph Cross, who plays Charlie, who I just think his emotional range in this is so brilliant. The touching moments, but he was so believable. Like I said before, I think child acting is so hard. I think more often than not, we get these child actors that just are too animated, too over the top. I don't really believe
they're
emotions.
All theater kids.
You know? Yes, 100%. So when we get someone with this kind of range, like a Jacob Tremblay, like a Haley Joel Osment, like it just, it's such a great performance.
1,000%. I mean, I have nothing to add to that. I mean, Michael Keaton, this is his movie and everyone else is just happy to be in it. Like
just there. Yeah.
Although you do have Mark Addy, who, I mean, again, aside from Joseph Cross, I mean, it's just fun to have him in a movie, you know, just to add
random
a little bit.
British random. Best friend.
Why not? British / Scottish best friend. Like he just had an accent. No one else has an accent. Everyone else is American. He just has an accent.
I love that. I love that. I miss that about movies where it's just like now, like they would have him do an American accent.
100%.
I feel
for no reason.
Versus, because it's like, why can't the people live abroad all the time and they have different accents and you don't need to explain that. It just makes sense.
Also, I need to get in a couple quotes here because there's some great butt jokes in this movie and stuff in general. Like just the one, like this is one that I know I probably said as a kid because in 98 when I watched this movie, I was probably like, I was 12, about 12 years old. So like this one, the first one I wrote down was, Jack is leaving for one of his band gigs and Charlie is like, no, like, don't leave. He's like, but dad. And he's like, but dad?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what your coach is teaching you? But dad. But dad, that would make you butt boy. And this would make us a butt family. See you later, butt family. And I'm like, dude, that's just such, what a great 90s, like, just series of jokes.
Have that written down too. So I was like, that is like top tier, like dad joke. And also, just like 90s dad joke. Like, that was so fucking funny to me for no reason.
I laugh so fucking hard.
Because I was a child of that era, maybe. Yes. I don't know if anyone else would laugh at that.
Everything was butts. Was butts. And for some reason, that was so offensive to adults that we would make butt jokes.
But. Well, I remember, like, my cousins growing up weren't allowed to say butt. They had to say hiney. They couldn't even say fart. They had to say toot.
Oh, same way. We couldn't say, like, because we would say butt face or butt head, and we couldn't say that. Yeah. Like, we would get
butt head, butt face.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time. Classic. Butt liquor. That was one of my favorites.
I feel like that was like the ultimate though. That's like saying the C word.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh, I love this one that was like, this is just so dark. So it's like the year after Charlie's dad died, they get out of school and then the bullies are like standing up on the hill and like they're trying to bully like Charlie. And the one kid's like, he's no fun to pick on anymore since his old man died. Oh. And then Rory's like, well, time he gets over it. I never even met my old man. It's like fucking
wild.
Dark. Yeah. Fucked up. But also like peak 90s. You know what I mean?
1,000%. Like I said, everything was about orphans or divorced dads. Like everything in the 90s, right? Like literally everything. So,
he's not fun to pick on anymore since his old man died.
There's this other one. Where it's later in the movie when it's after like Jack has melted a little bit and they've had to reform him. And he's like, my balls are freezing. Never thought I'd say that with a smile on my face. Like that. Yes. It's some of these throwaway lines that Michael Keaton has that are just so fucking fucking
There's another one that's like, that's a throwaway where he slides down a snowdrift and he's like, oh, that's the coldest wedgie I've ever had. Like what? I love this one. This is again when he's just like walking around like by himself talking to himself. And he's like, it's bad enough my ticket got punched, but to come back like this, it's embarrassing.
I love the one where he's like, is when Jack is battling all the bullies with snowballs and he's going,
oh God, yes.
He's going, I am the Wizard of Blizzard. He goes, now run, you little mountain goats. And I'm like, where the fuck did that even fucking come from? Like,
oh my God, I was obsessed with that scene. Him throwing snowballs like a fucking machine gun. Oh. Incredible.
That's all we wanted to do as kids. That's like when I grew up in the North, you just wanted to throw snowballs as fast and as hard as you could. Like,
oh, yeah. 100%. If you don't basically like take someone's tooth out, like, what are you even doing? I also love this when Jack or Charlie sees Jack for the first time and he's like, I can explain everything. Well, I can't explain the part about me being a snowman. I was like, well, that is everything.
Well, that's
I thought that was so funny because it's literally them saying they can't even explain it. Like the movie can't explain it, which I think was, again, brilliant.
And just one last one that I had is when Charlie's like, another throwaway line that just cracked me up for no reason, where he's like, you the man. And then he goes, nope, I'm the snowman. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Again.
Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
90s. My one last one here is when Charlie and Rory, which is Rory's his bully, kind of have this like come to terms where
yes.
Rory discovers that Jack is, or that the snow, or that the snowman is alive, and then it's his dad. And so Rory helps him basically get on this like truck to go to the mountains. And Charlie's like, you know what it's like to not have a dad. And then Rory, like when he like gets them on the truck, he's like, snow dad is better than no dad.
Well, and he also is like, yeah, it sucks.
It sucks. His fucking response to that. You know what it's like to not have a dad? Yeah, it sucks.
Sucks. But that was like,
it's supposed to be the serious moment.
But that's like such a 12-year-old conversation, though. Exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't go much deeper than that. Like, you just have an understanding between yourselves. And like, that is the exact conversation you would have.
It is. Yeah, you're right. Because kind of when you're at that age, everything is a little bit surface level. You know, like you just kind of say exactly what you're feeling or mm-hmm. what you mean. Like it's never deeper than that. And so it made me laugh so hard because I was like, that is such a child thing, like conversation, you know? And it was just so fucking funny to me. Like also snow dad is better than no dad. Brilliant. I want that to be the tagline of the movie.
How did they not make a sequel to this? Like, how is there not a sequel to this fucking movie?
God, they should have had one. I mean, honestly, I would keep watching this like it was fucking like year after year.
Yeah, 100%.
Just every year he comes back as a snowman.
Does something else.
And he like helps his son like raise his kids.
He's like grandpa snowman at some point. What? Oh god.
Well, eventually he like figures out a way to fuck his wife.
Like, 100%.
She gets frostbite in the vagine.
No, but it's like a carrot or something. Like, but then, yeah, they couldn't do it inside. They have to do it outside, right? Because it'd be too hot inside, he'd melt. Oh yeah. There's all sorts of logistics. So,
a lot happening.
All right, Jade. Where do you rate this film?
Oh my god, this might be bold, but this is a treasure for me. I mean, I know that's a high rating, but I think it's because I've watched this movie several times now, and it's probably been about like 10 years maybe since I've seen it last, and it's still good to me. Like, it still holds up. It's still funny. It's still sweet, and I just think it's a good movie.
It's been a long time since I've watched this, and I think until this conversation, I was leaning Jim, but like, I think it's a treasure. Like, this is a movie I could see myself watching next year, like adding it back into my repertoire of like Christmas movies. Yeah. I don't know why I haven't. And also, you know what the thing I'll say about this? Even if you find some of the stuff juvenile and you're not into it, this is one of the few movies, like I remember I clicked up once to see where we were and I was almost at the end of the movie. Like it was almost perfect. I was like, oh, okay, yes. Is this wrapping up? And I'm like, yes, it is. It has like literally 3 more minutes left and it's over. And I'm like, that is the perfect amount of time for this movie. Like this movie, there was not... That just shows me, like, I was pretty much not bored throughout this entire film. Like, it was enjoyable. So this is a treasure.
It's an hour and 41 minutes, and, like, it did not feel like that. Mm-mm. It felt like maybe an hour to me.
Yes. Yes.
Like, it just...
The pacing is amazing. Smooth.
Yes. Such a good, easy watch. Like, enjoyable. It felt, like, Christmassy. It was just fun. And if you guys have kids, you can watch this with your kids. I'm sure they would enjoy it. Yeah, it's just, You're right. This needs to be my regular rotation of Christmas movies. And I think it gets kind of forgotten about because there's just so many fucking Christmas movies now. But like, it's kind of top tier for me.
Yeah.
So, also, do not mistake this for the 1997 Jack Frost film, which is a horror movie about a snowman that comes to life.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about that one. So this is the 1998 Jack Frost. Yeah. And that was our review of Jack Frost. It's streaming now on Hulu.
Charlie's run away with the snowman. Really?
What's the snowman look like?
Three bowls, two stick arms.
Hey, that's my branch!
Stocky, well built.
Shredding!
Oh! Hey, I slimmed down. Whoa!
Thanks for giving me a second chance to be your dad.
And once again, our movie this week was Jack Frost. It's the 1998 version. You can watch it now for free on Hulu. Even internationally, you can watch it for free because we didn't have Hulu. But if you have a crafty little VPN router, you can make it look like you're watching from anywhere. So you can still watch it.
There you go.
For free. But, Jade, just to kind of wrap things up here, we didn't get to finish all of our news. There is some big news happening in television right now. For those who are a Doctor Who fans, I honestly, I've only really watched with Danny because she's kind of a fan and I never really got into it. But like,
I only ever watched the David Tennant seasons.
All I watched is David Tennant. Like, and it's great. Like, it's good. Like, I'd probably watch more. I just, I don't know. Like, it's okay. Like, it's one of those things, like, if it's on, I'll watch it, you know, kind of thing. But they're getting a new doctor and it's actually not just a new doctor, Jade. It's a first. For Doctor Who.
Yes. Yeah. So Nshuti Gatwa, who some of you may know as Eric from Sex Education, has been cast as Doctor Who. So he will be the first Black Doctor Who in the history of the character. And what's really cool is, so each doctor gets a different screwdriver. So it's kind of this universal tool that each doctor uses. And it can be anything. So in the past, it's been like glasses. It's been an umbrella. So Nshuti's version, his is almost like a remote, which people on the internet have been having a really fun time with comparing it to the Click remote from the movie Click with Adam Sandler. And they're not wrong. It does kind of look like the Click remote. But the prop makers who created it, I thought, did something really cool and inscribed on it as a Rwandan proverb, which is a nod to Nshuti's heritage, which I thought was really cool and really sweet. So this is really exciting. I believe he's also one of the youngest Doctor Who's as well. But I think this is an awesome casting choice. Nshuti is so dynamic on screen. I think he's just so fun. He has a really big personality. I think he's going to bring a lot to the character. And I think it's fun just having someone different. I think last season or the season before, I can't remember, was when they cast the very first female Doctor Who, which I remember that was, people were pissed about that.
Didn't after her run, didn't David Tennant return shortly for a couple of episodes?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. So I think there was like a gap, if I can remember. And people were pissed because they were like, oh, how can the doctor be a woman? I'm like, what do you mean? How can the doctor be a different fucking person every time? And that's the whole point is, and they explain it in the show. Yeah. So any fan of Doctor Who would know that they change identities constantly. Like, and they are pretty much non-binary. They are pansexual.
Yeah.
I believe it's been stated. Like,
and here's an interesting point, Jade. I'm not like a super fan. I don't know all the lore. I don't know all the characters. Like, I've only seen bits and pieces of Doctor Who. But I had this TikTok, of course, come up because I'm sure this was in the news. Come on and talk about how Doctor Who literally has no canon. And the reason for that is because a couple of reasons, but he basically says, like, let's just take, for example, like how the Doctor regenerates, right? Like, but not regenerates, but just who the Doctor actually is. They're like, in the early seasons of Doctor Who, he was a human. He was a human person that was just like, had a super extra ability. He goes, in later seasons, he is an alien that comes from another planet. And he goes, that was not established until much later in the series. So he goes, what is he? He's like, you can go on and on with different aspects of this, but he's like, he goes through several of them and he's just like, it's one thing here, it's another thing here. And he even talks about, yep, one of the problems is like the BBC doesn't own all of the rights to Doctor Who. There are like certain that characters that are owned by other people. He said there's like four or five owners of different elements of Doctor Who, and they have all done different things. There's even like, and I think there's like a porn with like some of the villains, like with license, like actual characters. Like, so he's,
oh,
like,
oh my God.
He's like, if you were considering that canon, that would actually be canon because they are licensed in that movie. It's not a spoof. Like, you know, so he goes, people getting, basically his point was like, people getting mad about any of this, anything in Doctor Who is wild because literally everything and nothing is canon in this thing. It's not, it's not Star Wars. It's not fucking Game of Thrones. He goes, there is nothing written down. He goes, you just have to take whatever is established. You know, that is
exactly. It's, you just kind of have to take it at face value. Essentially, it's each time there's a new doctor and a new almost world timeline established, it's, it is kind of a reset. It is basically starting over and saying, okay, well, here's this person and here's what they do and here's kind of their history. And, you know, and I think it's totally fine. I think it's a great way to kind of keep a character alive, but yet interesting and without it feeling stale. You know what I mean? Because it's like, yeah, how much can you learn about one person over what, like decades and decades? So yeah, I think, and again, like I said, I think it's an amazing casting choice. And I'm excited to see how he does and how people are loving him as, Doctor Who.
Well, Jade, the other thing I'm excited about this next week is the movie that we chose to review in our next episode. And you know, it might not come out on Monday because it is Christmas on Monday. So, we might skip that day and just, put out something a day or two after, but we decided not to go for a Christmas theme for this next movie, Jade, because we saw a new film that's coming out on Netflix that we're both excited about, which is
Chicken Run: Dawn of the Nugget.
I really enjoyed this movie when it came out because it was huge for its time. Like, I feel like Chicken Run was everywhere. And everyone knew about claymation. I feel like we all I wanted to make a claymation movie. Like,
I was obsessed with Chicken Run when it came out, to the point that I got two copies of it on VHS for Christmas. That's by hilarious. Two different people, because I talked about that movie fucking constantly. So, and only that, but like, I used to quote it all the time and I watch it all the time. Like, I still think about that. Like, I still say, oh, is she on holiday to this day? Especially with my mom, because my mom knows, because that's when I would say it all the fucking time, was around her. So, the fact that there's a sequel, I'm so excited. I love anything claymation. This is also from the creators of Wallace and Gromit. So any of those, you know, films, if you're a fan, obviously Chicken Run is from the same creators. Yeah. So it should be good.
Oh, goodness. Excuse me. Well, this is just essentially, like I said, Dawn of the Nugget, is because this is a little bit about a new generation, right?
Yeah. So basically it follows, you know, at the end of the first film, they escape the Tweety farm and they kind of find a little sanctuary for them on a little island. But the problem is Ginger, our main character, she realizes there's all these other chickens out there who are also on farms, who are going to their deaths. So she decides to stage kind of a coup and break into the farms and release all of the chickens. So it should be just really fun, kind of little romp adventure. We also get our villains from the last film back, the Tweeties. Mrs. Tweety, total psychopath. You know that she, one day she's going to murder her husband and turn him into Popeye.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
That's going to be the third film. Oh my God. Truly.
Yes. Well, you can find that if you want to watch ahead. You can find that on Netflix. But Jade, where can folks find us between now and next week?
You guys can follow us on all of our socials. We are on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Our Taste is Trash. Or you can find us on our website, ourtasteistrash.com.
Come back next week when we review our movie, which is timingly, I think, for Christmas, just so great, but it should be good. it should be a great new movie if you want to watch it with your family. It's streaming now on Netflix. It's Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. Come back next week. To get ourselves a treat.